Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. We're here. We're back with another episode of Entitled Town. On the one hand, I wasn't sure if Al was going to make it to this one. He's kind of like the J.D. Drew of this podcast, which means that you can just compare him. Like, you can just make up anything about it and just say he's like J.D. Drew. You don't have to sort out why. What's the fascination with Al? Mike Irons is here. We're doing an episode of Entitled Town. I'm Dave Brown. Mike, can you tell me that famous line, to borrow a famous phrase from the great Bob Ryan, what is the fascination with Al?
If I was going to be too loquacious, I would compare, instead of comparing him to J.D. Drew, I'd compare him to Rex Burkhead. Because I believe that Al is a low rent, even more oft injured version of J.D. Drew. That Gasper ham-handed analogy, trying to compare Rex Burkhead to J.D. Drew. We talked about this just before we got on air. It's like, I still kind of have a short in my brain trying to do that.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's start. So it's been a long time since we've put out an episode. We recorded one that we were not in love with. And it was like, we were just trying to assess a lot of the things going on in the world. We promised people an episode a while back about the Wickersham story, one of the Wickersham and Van Natta story from 2015. We sat down with our notes ready to record it and then had a mess of technical problems.
Well, the issue with the Wickersham and Van Natta thing, it's at this point, it's almost as timely as a shank piece. It's been dissected and analyzed to the nth degree.
Not by us. And I still think we'll get to that. I think there will be a time for it. And that night we sat down to record was a pretty good time to kind of get in, pick it apart. I've got my notes. I got them right here. These are my actual, I promise you, Mike can testify. These are my notes that I'm holding up.
Dave's holding up a Friends comic book.
Whoa, this is so crazy. Oh my gosh. It looks like right now I've got pictures of Kraft and Belichick floating over an image of Gillette Stadium. And that's all Mike can see. Isn't that wild? Look at that. Is that intimidating?
This is great for an audio podcast.
For a visual, yeah, I know. For our audio content here, but
what is this? What do we have? WEI producers? For the love of God!
I mean, we should be so lucky. But okay, so I think there's a future for that story. I got notes. I'm ready to do it. I think we'll get into it another time. What happened was that night we sat down, we had a bunch of technical problems. We said, let's come back and record this at another time. And then, like, the whole world went even more nuts. And we were like, this just isn't the time to talk about this nonsense. It's just like, there's so much else going on in the world. Let it play out. And I think we were eager to do an episode. We sat down last week after things had kind of died down, but there were still some things going on in the sports world that we hadn't talked about. We sat down and we talked about them, and it was just not an episode of Entitled Town.
I would like to think that we exhibited some self-awareness on that.
Yeah. It was like a good conversation between us, and I feel like
left between us.
An episode of this show, right?
Yeah, there's no reason for two old white guys to opine and lecture anyone on anything at this point in time.
And I don't think we even lectured much, but I think it was like
you're an attorney, David. You lectured.
Well, I guess I didn't get anywhere near my lecturing potential, which is pretty high. But I always play the show back in my head, like after we record it. I don't post it right away, and I sit down and I kind of think through, like, what was in that episode? Is there anything that was like crazy And that episode, I sat down and went through my head. I was like, why would I talk about that? Why would I say that? No one wants to hear this. And so so I'm happy to take the blame for it. That one didn't work out. But in the last third of that episode, you like checked the news, which shows you how compelling that episode was. And what happened? Cam Newton signed. Boom,
Cam Newton signed with the Patriots about 75% into that podcast.
Yeah, and then you hit me with the double whammy because the news about the punishment for fake Spygate came out. And it was like, it was too much to wrap our heads around. It was like, we just...
Left hook, right cross. Left hook and right cross.
Yeah. We're like, we're in the middle of this garbage. So the next day, I said to you, I was like, I don't think we should put this out. And you were like, yeah, I agree. You were like, I was just about to say this to you. So that was unanimous. And then it was like, oh, when can we record again? And this situation is just not conducive to the show. I think listeners or kids understand that like when you have kids and your whole life is just work and daycare and work and daycare, and to get the time to sit down to do this is a super challenge on my end. But here we are. We found some time. And
that podcast, that we tried to do was like the Ben Stein monologue in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. In 90, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives said the anyone. And then the Newton news drops with the punishment stuff. It's like you cut the Sloan taking off her top and the hot tub in Ferris Bueller. It's like one has nothing to do with the other.
I've seen Chris Gasper tweets that I followed more easily than that reference. But
words hurt, Brown.
I'll just agree with you. How about that?
Let's just agree and move on.
All right. So here we are. For those of you who can't see at home, I have a Steve Balboni mustache. And I don't know why
I assume you're not allowed within 500 feet of a school with that.
I think I'm only saying it because it's very distracting when I'm looking at our Zoom. So one positive effect of the pandemic, and one thing that it has done for the show, is that it brought to our attention that we can look at each other on Zoom. And now we talk over each other less in the episodes that we don't put out.
Allegedly.
So, okay, we've got topics. We get tons of topics now. All of a sudden, it's not like sitting around rehashing what happened to Tom Brady in March. The world has changed. We are in the Cam Newton era, in theory. He signed. I believe the last time we talked about this, we came at it from the angle of, and I think we're half right. I think we said, we don't see the Patriots signing Cam Newton because he's going to cost like probably around 15, like the discount we saw was like around $15 million.
But keep in mind, the discount that we're reading is usually agents filtered through the press.
But I figured at the time, like, if Cam Newton takes a discount, he's still going to want to play somewhere for $15 million. And our thinking was kind of like, is he 15 times better than Stidham, who makes just under $1 million? Well, they got him for half that. And the way they structured his contract is that $7.5 million, he'd have to play at least 15 times better than what we think Jared Stidham can be.
So his guarantee is $250,000.
I thought it was 550, but still,
I'm in the neighborhood. Okay, I can't even read my own writing, but
it's ostensibly a half a million dollars
for a scratch ticket. In terms of a half a million dollar guarantee in NFL parlance, it's a dollar scratch ticket.
And so now. I'll be the first to say that I don't know that Cam Newton is the best quarterback on this roster, but I know that when he's healthy, he has the tools to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So to get him for the price they got him
is insane. So,
you can't say no to it.
Agreed. I don't think so. This is going to be another ham-handed analogy, Dave, but when the Giants drafted Eli Manning number one overall in 2004, they also signed Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
As an oft-injured former MVP backup, who they brought in to be the starter. Right.
Yes.
And you can do the same thing to a different degree. It's not quite the same when the Ravens signed Steve McNair.
Well, I think looking at that Warner, because I remember that very well. Like, I remember my feeling with the Giants was that.
What are they doing? Are the Patriots getting Warner with the Giants or Warner with the Cardinals is what it is.
Yeah, right. And that shows you how that's a really good example of why you can't take things for granted in this league. We can't take for granted that Newton's going to be the best quarterback on this roster because, you know, for whatever reason, Warner just wasn't a good fit that year. And Kerry Collins had played well for them.
He wasn't healthy when he signed with the Giants.
No, he was. He played like 10 games.
He had the hand problem. He had the hand problem. If Newton's shoulder's okay, he had the Liz Frank foot thing, then he has a chance. But Belichick's not going to give him that job. And it's if nothing else, it gives Stidham something to compete for. And you kind of see what Stidham's mental makeup is worth. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not into that whole bringing a guy to check him out. I think that, and one thing we discussed about this before, you see Matt Chatham say it a lot, is how do you get a new quarterback ready for this system in what's going to be sort of an unconventional training camp? How do you get him ready for this offense? How do you – because remember, Brady always talked about how this was like a graduate-level offense. He used that quote all the time and how difficult it was for other receivers to come in and get it. Now, they're starting over with a new guy. What's this offense going to be? I think the one consistent thread here is that he and Stidham have some of the same tools, so that's useful. But are they going to have to share reps in training camp? What's it going to be like trying to get him ready? Can you count on that? I don't necessarily think so.
They have three NFL caliber quarterbacks during a pandemic. That counts for something.
Our boy Brian Hoyer.
Yeah, you and I are Team Hoyer. I mean, we've been
Team Hoyer all the way.
Yeah, agreed.
So okay, so you know, so I just wanted to make that point that I don't think that Cam Newton is a given. But
he's not a given.
Right.
I don't care how many videos he puts on Instagram and that's his marketing team.
Motivated.
And that's all it is. And like the old white guy in me just rolls his eyes at this shit. It's self-promotion the same way Brady did it over the last couple of years of the TB12 branding.
I don't know. Come on. I see that stuff and I'm like, oh, Cam Newton is clearly a crazy person. Like he's clearly Like there is a special kind of mentally unhinged that drives athletes and where you have to take everything as a slight. And I think Cam has shown us some of that in his recent videos that he is like, hey, I'm annoyed. I'm coming for this league. And, you know, I don't know that it's an act. It seems pretty kooky to me. But
right, hold on. Take off your journalist hat for a second. Let's pretend that Daniel Jones doesn't exist and the Giants signed Cam Newton for $550,000 guarantee for 1 year. How would you feel?
I'd be psyched. I'm just saying that I think that his
– I'm not. I'm just kind of like, we'll see.
I'd be sitting here going, I just spent $550,000 to have a guy in training camp who's 31 years old, won the MVP in 2015. And like, honestly, that's pretty cool because I think whatever happens, the Patriots are going to have a different kind of look to this offense and the ability to surprise people in a way that they haven't done for some time. And, you know, be it Newton or Stidham, I'd be feeling very happy with my options going into training camp if it was those two guys. But we don't know. We're going to have to see.
And we have to take into account that the variable is – they may have Steve Balestrieri from PatsFans.com today reported they may only have 70 people in training camp because of concerns with COVID. Mm-hmm. And I was all ready to make a comparison to this reminds me a lot of Belichick was the coach of the Browns when he brought in a recently released Vinny Testaverde in 1993 or 1994. And I think that is, I've thought for a long time, you know, when the Patriots replaced Brady, that they would certainly have a veteran on the roster. And I thought that veteran 6 weeks ago was Brian Hoyer. I think there's some parallels. Newton's obviously a more accomplished player prior to being released than Newton was. But Testaverde was a number one draft pick overall. Newton was a number one draft pick overall. You can argue, Testaverde certainly underachieved when he's with Tampa Bay. There were a lot of mitigating factors with Testaverde in Tampa Bay in the late 80s, early 90s. Newton got to a Super Bowl. I just think that the parallel there is the Testaverde-Newton thing and the Warner. The Warner thing is completely analogous. Say right? again?
That's where it all ties together because they both played for the Panthers.
Who both played for the Panthers?
Testaverde played for the Panthers late in his career.
Okay, I see.
Testaverde might have been like – I'm trying to remember when he did that. I guess it was like 2008, like right after DeLome.
No, he ended with the Pats in 06. He threw a touchdown pass of the Patriots in 06, no. I think.
Like 07 or 08. He did. No, you're right. But then he went to the Panthers.
Okay. I'll take your word
for it. And looking at
– If only I had a handheld device that could connect to a World Wide Web of information.
Well, all of the Brady stuff with Brady getting up to – what's he going to be, 43 this season?
Yeah.
I've looked this up in the past, and Testaverde has had – he had a few starts for the Panthers in his early 40s, and let's see.
You're right. He started six games. He started six games for the Panthers in 07.
And that's at age 44, which I think it might be the most starts at age 44, at least in recent NFL history. So, you know, that was like one of those things you look up when you're trying to chart out whether Tom Brady is a crazy person. But anyway, look to make this about the Giants even more, and the number one draft pick coming in, it reminds me of Kerry Collins and how former Panthers number one pick, he didn't pan out there, had alcohol problems, went to New Orleans, kind of rehabbed his career, and then came to the Giants and took them to a Super Bowl, which they did not win.
Highly drafted quarterbacks are like left-handed pitchers. They're always going to get second, third, fourth chances. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. And
unless you're Heath Shuler because you suck that bad.
One of the things that we didn't account for in trying to figure out whether the Patriots would go and get Cam Newton was the idea that was how this was all going to play out with the pandemic. And apparently it's come out in some reports that he had trouble getting in for physicals, getting in for workouts.
We absolutely talked about that. It's absolutely a factor.
We didn't know that
he can't go into a facility and show that he's healthy. Right. He can't go in and show that he can rip it.
Right. True. But I guess personally, I didn't factor in the possibility that we'd be sitting here in July and he'd still be unsigned.
But there's a thousand examples, regardless of sport, NBA, NHL, NFL, MLB, where guys bet on themselves. They're doubted. Cam Newton, let's face it. There's a faction of football intelligentsia that just doesn't like his quote unquote act. He seems to be about him. He rubs people the wrong way. Myself included, being an old white, just rolling my eyes. And I roll my eyes.
Are you saying that you don't like Cam Newton? Are you saying that like old white guys don't like Cam Newton?
Don't lump me into that group there, Brown. I'm holding my nose with the signing.
Answer the question. But I think that like
I'm not wearing a robe, sir.
Newton has been like Cam Newton has been, and this is why it was so stupid for Felger to go out and criticize the celebration. Cam Newton has been like this lightning rod, going back to when he used to dab. Like people always talk about Cam Newton celebrations, and I'm like, they are the most innocuous. Like, yeah, like they scored, he did a thing. Cam Newton didn't decide to bring attention to his celebrations. The media did. The media is almost all like the sports media.
Dave, he's looking for attention. Come on.
Who's giving it to him?
And what is he looking for? What is he looking for? It's chicken and egg.
Let's follow the cycle of attention. Cam Newton decides, okay, I'm going to dab after my touchdown. By the way, you throw a touchdown pass in the NFL. If you want to dance, do it. I don't care. You threw a touchdown. I've always been pro celebration. Joe Horn, pulling the cell phone out of the end zone or out of the goalpost. I thought that was really clever. I don't know why we have to find a guy for that. And we've seen the clip where Bill Belichick advises players. Now, there is a line somewhere, and Rob Gronkowski said we're not supposed to talk about the celebrations we do. Somebody else, I think it was Akeem Hicks, said that he was once told, like, we don't celebrate like that without really specifying what the celebration was. But Bill Belichick does encourage guys, like, you went out there and you made a play. Like, go celebrate it. Celebrate together, too. It's intimidating to the other team. I think that was from the 2009 documentary. It's out there. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So this stuff just doesn't bother me. You know what bothers me is a guy like Asante Samuel.
Dropping a pass in the Super Bowl bothered me.
Well, for no reason, going after Darryl Green. Why did everybody say Darryl Green's so good? He's a Hall of Famer. What did he ever do? And it's like, okay, you weren't a perfect player, Asante. We got you. You entered free agency two plays early in 2007, costing your team a Super Bowl. So relax. But that stuff bothers me. But like the guy's celebrating and all that. Here's what happens. Here's the cycle of attention. Is like, let's say Cam Newton is doing it for attention. Somebody has to give it to him, and you know who's giving it to him? Somebody else is doing it for attention. It bothers me more because when Michael Felger has a problem with it, because how many touchdowns has Mike Felger scored? How many jerseys has he worn? How many presidential elections
has he won? He's doing
it
for clicks and for listeners. That's what you're saying. You're not
wrong. He's not celebrating something he did. I look at it this way. I think that what these players on the field do is an extraordinary feat, okay, to get into the league in the first place. Then you put in all this time and practice against those 11 guys out there who are trying to stop you from scoring. You read the defense properly. You avoid a pass rush. You perfectly place the ball. Go nuts. Be Superman. Touchdown. Your points are on the board. That is so hard to do. Enjoy yourself, because who knows if you're ever going to get to do it again. This guy was almost out of the league in his mind.
I agree with you in this way. It's kind of peak stupid outrage to make this a talking point. And it's a peak. I would like to say it's peak Felcher talking point during the summer or during a pandemic, but it's kind of par for the course for what that show is doing.
Right. Well,
those people on that show.
And everybody's the player. We've talked about this on the show before. We certainly talked about it last week, or the last show that we didn't put out, about how that they use that word, the player, to dehumanize people. So that when you're angry, you're not thinking about Cam Newton, the person. You're thinking about a player who you don't like. So it anonymizes you. It takes away your humanity. The player, every time I hear the player, they're not talking about Julian Edelman. They're not talking about Tom Brady. And that Felger came out. So Felger talked about celebrations. This has been a lightning rod for years. It got nasty with people from all over the South. Like, I can't let my children watch this. Like the same people who write into the FCC and complain that Prince made their kid gay. I swear to God, there's an actual FCC complaint where somebody basically complained that Prince was turning their kids gay for the Super Bowl. Not joking. But anyway, so that's been a whole big thing, and I feel like to ignore that is a little ridiculous when you're making comments about him. I think they knew what was going on there. And then for Felger to defend himself, to use the "I was mean to Tom Brady's children" defense, that's not a defense to me. That doesn't mean you're not racist because you, or look. I would say
I'm not calling Michael Felger a racist. I'm calling him an asshole across every fucking line.
Definitely, that's true. But I think
He's a baiting asshole, but trying to capture your rage for his pocketbook.
That particular line of attack was racially insensitive. That's what I'll say. He's not, the guy's not out
there. In the current environment, let's just say in the current environment, it was
dumb. So stupid. Yes, you're not considering the implications of what you say, right? And
that's kind of their tagline. They don't consider any implications from what they say.
But when the quarterback was white, they didn't have to think about that. Okay.
Did you call him the quarterback?
I go after his wife and kids, no problem. Of course you're not being racist when you make fun of Tom Brady's wife and kids.
Oh, I just go after a minor. No big deal. I did it to a white minor. I'm doing it to a man of color who's an adult. You're a prick either way.
Yeah, it's not a defense that wipes the...
It's not a defense, Dave. It's not a defense.
No, it's not a defense.
It's an indictment. Listen, it's not a defense.
I am not racist. I have been terrible for other reasons. So you're just terrible.
I was not racist on that occasion.
I'm just thank you, Mr. President. But anyway, Cam Newton, we'll see what happens.
We don't know. Interesting. We just don't know.
Right. It's good. Look. You got a great camp situation here. We're going to find out what's happening. The Patriots are, look, they just found $6.5 million yesterday.
That's found
morning.
Money. Agreed. That's found money. I think we can all agree on this. I listened today to a podcast with Rotillo with Andy Benoit from, I think he's with the MMQB or SI
now.
He used
to be. I think he left.
At any rate, Andy Benoit actually went through, God help me, went through every interceptable pass in the 2019 season. I listened to the podcast. Okay. And they were asking, why did Bill Belichick sign Cam Newton? And I'm driving in my car, and I'm screaming at the radio, because he signed for $500,000 guaranteed. Yeah. If Cam Newton was going to make $15 million this season with $10 million guaranteed at signing, I don't care if it was the Revis contract and you spread it over 2 years, they weren't going to do it. It's an asset. It's an asset acquisition. That's all it is. They get a scratch ticket to see what Newton's worth.
Right. What happens if, what happens if you decide that Cam Newton is your second best quarterback, but then a guy like Carson Wentz gets hurt right before the season starts?
Now you can
go deal Cam Newton and get something in return.
Listen, I don't care whether if you're on the roster, you're an asset on paper. I'm not dehumanizing in a Felcher way. Cam Newton potentially undervalued asset. And like you said, if Jared Goff gets, Russell Wilson gets hurt, whoever it is, Cam Newton, if Stidham looks good and Newton is an asset, you then have a good hand to play in the market.
So immediately, everyone's first thought was, this is like going to be a comp pick. He'll like everybody advanced him to the stage where he has started for the Patriots and is going to be a sought after free agent. The guy who just signed a minimum deal, we're projecting him now as a top free agent next winter. And so what will happen is the Patriots will get a comp pick for him. First of all, that analysis is possible, but it's very flawed because there's so much that can happen between now and then. Newton might not make the roster. Newton might make the roster and not start. He might make the roster. He might start and not play well. They might re-sign him. They might just like him so much they re-sign him.
I did find it interesting that they do have the option to franchise him.
They could franchise
him. They did not sign that away.
Yeah, no, they didn't give that away. They could franchise him. And then the other, what's left after that is, so now we've gotten to free agency. Like, if all those things don't happen and he gets the free agency and signs somewhere else, the Patriots have a ton of cap space for 2021. They could go out and sign more free agents than they lose, which means they would not get a comp pick. Now, Newton going somewhere else,
that's a great point. That's a great
point. Give them a chance.
$100 million, yeah.
That they wouldn't have had to get something. It will affect. It would be a plus in the comp formula for them. But none of this is guaranteed. Don't lock into this idea. I don't think it's about getting a third round comp pick. I think that when you sit down at the end of the day and you look out, coming in, we're paying a very small price. It would be very easy for us to get a return on that price if he makes a roster. If he plays, if he leaves in free agency, if we trade him, if he winds up as the backup and someone gets hurt, we have a great backup. So I think for that $500,000 or whatever that they're plunking down now to have him in camp, I think they look at it and they go, there are a lot of different paths to a return on that investment.
It's a really cheap insurance policy.
Yeah. And he might be the show this year. He very well might be. And I'll tell you what, Patriots fans, no one's going to be getting upset at Cam Newton doing the Superman celebration if he's doing it for you. Every celebration for you is fine because you're not even
– when you say you, you have a kind of a Felcher undertone on that. Be careful, Giant fan.
I'm talking about Patriots Nation. Okay.
You have Daniel Jones as your quarterback caller.
Danny Dimes, baby. Here we go. Take off. Blast off. We're going into space.
I'll give you two nickels for a dime. There you go.
So, okay. So that's, I think we've about covered it generally on Newton. It's like, hey, let's see what happens. I think it could be really interesting. Hashtag interesting. By the way, you just raised a great point about the cap, and I want to get into it because we can sideswipe Ben Volen while we do it. So here we go. The cap
the erstwhile Mittens. He sucks, Dave. That's like, I hate even giving him a shout out, even in the with a negative connotation. He is the laziest garbage in Boston media. Go ahead.
Well, all right. So, and by the way, it also kind of brings in that Chris Gasper comment about J.D. Drew and Rex Burkhead.
Because Volen with a thesaurus. That's all Gasper is. He's Volen with a thesaurus.
I would say that Chris has a talent, and he's much better.
Yeah, being annoying is his talent.
Well, I mean.
Obsequious.
I
boring.
Think I can do that better.
I don't have That's a thesaurus.
I could be more annoying than Chris Gasper, okay? I mean. Let's be, you know, not to brag.
You know, I stand corrected. You're right.
But no, I think Chris does a really good job of
disagree. Knowing how, right there, disagree.
You want to hear the rest of the sentence?
No, knowing how I really to
sound,
don't.
Knowing how to convince the mainstream audience that he is smart, that he is
the unwashed masses, is what you're saying, the uninformed masses who have
I think generally, like I think he has figured out how to sound like. A smart columnist. I really do. And that's not easy. Like he gets something. He gets the flow. He gets he speaks with the jargon. He gets like, he's very good with the thesaurus. I think Chris is, I don't think any of this is necessarily easy, but then when you dig into the reasoning, it starts to fall apart in a way where like, I think this is very common with this particular era of sports writer where you're just replicating what the previous generation had done. And I've talked about this before about how the Globe kind of casts its staff. It's not like, let's just go get the best guy. It's like, well, we used to have a Bob Ryan. So who's going to be our Bob Ryan? And then Gasper's kind of like the Bob Ryan and he can make columns that sort of sound and fit right. And then you unwind the logic and you wonder, did Bob Ryan even ever have the logic down?
Dave, has Chris Gasper ever had an original thought?
He thinks J.D. Drew's like Rex Burkhead.
Okay, that's an original thought. You're a moron, but it's an original thought.
No, I think, listen, I think Chris, I think there's a challenge in doing what Chris does.
Yeah, it's a challenge because you're an idiot with a thesaurus.
But
you're a self-important idiot with a thesaurus.
I mean, I don't think he's an idiot. So
please enlighten me. What has Chris Gasper shed some light on in a new and interesting way?
That's what I don't think he does.
He's an idiot.
I don't think he does that.
He's an idiot.
I think there are
like
a lot of people who are
other,
smart.
He's like
don't
every
shed light on
other
new and
writer at the
way.
Globe, and he happened to escape the Globe ethos. He's now at Channel 5.
Yeah.
which means his idiocy should be contained to a 3-minute nightly newscast. But evidently, WCVB has a website, and he's opining there. But ignore Chris Gasper at all costs.
So the thing, there's
Dave,
my point.
He's terrible. You're couching it. He's terrible. He's terrible. I didn't say he was good.
I'm not saying
terrible.
He's not terrible. I'm saying that like there is a talent, and he has
If boring is a talent, then he's talented.
You know what it is? It's like, you know who's talented? It's Creed. Creed is like, we're going to put together a band that basically sounds like Pearl Jam and has nothing interesting to say.
That's if you're going to say Creed from The Office, talent. I might agree.
That's a talent. It's just like people will buy tickets to that. But at the end of the day, when you sit there and you actually read Creed lyrics, you're like, you're not like, oh, this changed my life. No, you're not. Yeah, they just filled the space that got me through the moment where I wanted to think about, you know, Jesus, but also rock out a bit. Like, it just got you, like, I want to think about the Patriots, and I want to think about baseball, so I got this J.D. Drew and Rex Burkhead in the same space. And that's why he has a job. That's why he gives the people the product that they're looking for. And that's not easy to do. But at the end of the day, when you go through it, is Rex Burkhead anything like J.D. Drew? No.
Adjusted for inflation, Rex Burkhead makes 1/25th of what J.D. Drew made.
And to be like...
Good try, good effort, Gasper. Nice job.
And it's your couched cookie. under this, like, this supposedly famous Bob Ryan quote where... And I'm sure people remember it. People are like... Oh, some people have been like, that's famous. It's not. It's not a famous quote. It's not like
we won for the Giver. It was played ad nauseum on Ordway's Big Show back in, what was that?
There you go. So to a subset of people, yes, to a subset of people, that would resonate. And he goes and he says, like, Bob Ryan said, I didn't understand the fascination with Rex, with J.D. Drew. Or he asked the question, what is the fascination with J.D. Drew? And so now Chris is applying that same question to Rex Burkhead. And here's why. Here's why he did it. Because Rex Burkhead renegotiated his contract to take away $1 million in cap space. He gave away $1 million. And he's like, what's the fascination? And this is the problem. It's the same question that you just talked about with Benoit on that podcast you were listening to. And he's like, why would they sign Cam Newton? It's because the money is right. It fits the cap. It gives you a person who can give you more utility than the money they spend.
Agreed.
And here's the thing. The way that to ask that question that way and to approach it from that side of being like, what's the fascination of a guy who just gave up like 40% of his salary to stay? That's not a fascination. They just downgraded him. They just said he went from being a $2.5 million player to a $1.5 million player. Okay. To talk about the NFL without understanding the salary cap, to approach it from that way that Gasper did and that Benoit did, to talk about it that way is like talking about astrophysics with no understanding of gravity. Like, that's how important the salary cap is to understanding every personnel move. This is not a binary decision about whether this guy is better than this guy. It's about whether this guy at this price is going to play better than another player or proportionally better than another player for the same price.
So, Dave, I'll tell you this. It's emblematic of somebody who's never managed a budget, either in their household or professionally.
Yeah, and not putting yourself in the shoes of the decision maker. Like, this is a very common, the what's the fascination with is a very common rhetorical tool. It's not always expressed in those words. Usually it's, I don't understand why Pete Carroll didn't run the ball in the Super Bowl. That's been explained ad nauseum.
On this podcast as well.
Even on this podcast, yeah, with Daniel O'Neill, we talked about it. But when people say they don't understand, They're not asking you to explain it to them. When sports writers say they don't understand, what they're saying is, I'm smarter than the person who made this decision.
Spoiler, he's not. He's
I
not.
I figured it out.
So, like, Dave, hold on. Time out right there.
There are going to be things that Bill Belichick does that you don't understand, and here's why. I'm going to apply this blanketly to about 97 to 99.5% of the people who would comment on Bill Belichick.
Do you know who Rex Burkhead is?
Because he's smarter than you.
Do you know who Rex Burkhead is?
I do.
He is? No. He's Sammy Morris. Sammy Morris could catch the ball. He could run the ball. He played special teams. And this is where the ignorance of most of the Boston media following the Patriots comes through. There was that beautiful special teams play in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago in the 2018 season where they double somersaults in the end zone with Slater and Burkhead.
Yeah.
The ignorance of special teams highlighted by PPP recipient Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal. There is this special teams is they're trying to legislate it out of the game. There's no bigger phase, one phase of the game on a per play basis that has more effect on field position than special teams does. That is a market inefficiency in the same way that Newton was a market inefficiency. Burkhead is a market inefficiency.
I mean, look at how many guys they've paid more than $1.5 million to be.
Justin Bethel, Matt Slater,
Rex Burkhead. Special teams guys.
Right.
And Rex Burkhead contributes on offense in a way where
he's the only guy, he's the only running back on that roster. We haven't seen Damian Harris yet. White, probably going to pass. Michelle, probably going to run. Burkhead, who knows?
Right. And that makes a difference. And, like, you know, he's been the change of pace back the last couple of years. And then situationally, it's like, you know, like, here's – you don't understand the fascination with Rex Burkhead. Haas Wyatt-Duke in the Super Bowl when they were in the same play like three times in a row, right? The first time they were in that play, who caught the pass?
Yeah.
Burkhead.
Yeah.
And where did he line up when he caught it?
Yeah, you're right.
He lined up out wide.
Yeah.
Okay. In the Super Bowl.
He was
biggest drive of the year.
He was not in the slot. He was actually split left.
He was split left. and the idea that the most important – that wound up being the most important drive of the season, okay? I mean –
He also had a 21-yard run on the most important drive of the season in Super Bowl 53.
And unless you want to count the game-winning touchdown in overtime of the AFC Championship.
That's all. Sony Michel had already carried the ball 30 times, and they put in a guy who they trusted him as much as they trusted Michel. Yeah.
If you picked up a running back for $10 million, $5 million, $4 million, I'd be like, all right, we're getting to the territory where it starts making sense to question whether this person has the, will have the tools to justify that expenditure. With Rex Burkhead,
1 yard, Reggie Dupard made as much in 1987 with the Patriots as Rex Burkhead is going to make in 2020 with the Patriots.
Wow. If you're okay.
I say that because Reggie Dupard often searches himself on Twitter.
If you're of the school that all these running backs are the same, they can do the same thing. It didn't matter if you have Rex Burkhead or some chump off the street in these situations. First of all, you're wrong. But him making $1.5 million does not help your point there. You now have a contradiction because that's the kind of guy you should be looking for is the guy who knows your offense, makes $1.5 million, contributes on special teams. What am I missing? And then the other crazy part of the whole thing is when Gasper said that he was just referencing this Bob Ryan quote, he made it clear that he wasn't comparing Rex Burkhead and J.D. Drew. He can't track his own logic because what he's saying is, I just don't understand this. And it's back to that idea of the I don't get it. I am so smart. And if I don't get it, then it can't possibly make sense. And when, listen, everything I think about football starts with me quietly trying to figure out when I don't understand something that one of these executives has done, is to work backwards. How much do they make? How many years do they have in their contract? Just everything around that player, all of the points that go into the decision making. That's what I'm trying to sort out. But to just go at it from this lazy angle of, I don't understand it, so it's flawed, that doesn't sit well with me. Now, I use the word lazy for a reason, because I'm going to get into Ben Volen, who
– Volen in Latin translates to lazy.
Well, he got into the Patrick Mahomes deal like 5 days after everybody else did, and realized that there's no real that the first 2 years is cap hits basically don't change. And that was something they did structurally to ensure that that those 2 years would remain the same, so that they could give him a bonus. And anyway,
the Chiefs rolled over a lot of cap room from this year into next year. They did a good job with that. If everything stays as currently constituted,
but they'd already
Mahomes' cap hit won't affect the franchise number until 2023, I believe. So the Chiefs.
Well, I mean, it just doesn't change. It's the number is the same. They did do some, they did have to convert.
They added some onto his number this year, this coming year.
Okay, but for next year, they did not. They to keep his cap hit the same. By the way, it was only like a $30,000 difference from this year, and it's a $30,000 difference next year too. But like the way he discussed it, he came away with the laziest take, which is cap is crap. See, they can manipulate it to do anything they want, and it's like no. They didn't manipulate this. It was $24 million before they started his cap hit in 2021, and it's $24 million now. That's not manipulation. They just kept it the same. And they were able to do that through negotiation. But this idea, they both decided, like, this is how much money we want to give you, this is how we want to express it, so that it breaks down this way, and we can do the cap tricks later when we need to. But Ben's takeaway always is, this is why you should never let the cap get in the way of signing a player. Worst possible, laziest, not even thinking about it take. How? And we've said this on the show so many times. How does the NFL writer at the Boston Globe have that take? How?
He didn't get out his calculator for any of
it. So not close to reality.
He didn't hit a number on his keyboard to do this.
Look at the Patriots. It always, as soon as the player is off your team, of that so-called manipulation, I'm not talking about a specific player. I'm talking about any given player. As soon as that player is off your team, you feel the immediate ramifications of any cap so-called manipulations or tricks, anything that you think you were hiding, it all comes home to roost immediately. The Patriots got it this year with $13 million on Tom Brady as soon as they left the roster. These things happen. If you're going to push money into the future, it can come back, and a lot of it can bite you all at once. Antonio Brown made $20 million from the Pittsburgh Steelers last year, a team that he had left before free agency or whenever it was they traded him to the Raiders.
And the reason why that Cam Newton's on the team for less than $2 million cap hit if he makes the team, Jarrett Stidham the same thing, is because that $13 million from Brady is on the cap this year. They can only take people because the Patriots did a bad job of the cap last year. The Brown shit blew up in their face. The Brady stuff, they kicked the can down the road, and that's fine.
I don't think they did a bad job of the cap last year. I see what you're saying.
How can you not say the Brown thing was just a bad roll of the dice?
It didn't work, but it wasn't even that bad. It was like, because they split the money up, they moved $10 million to this year. It made a lot of sense at the time.
It doesn't make a lot of sense when you potentially lose your starting quarterback.
Okay, all I'm going to say is this. Well, yeah. I mean, look, Brady decided to go, so that cost him $13 million. Antonio
That's
Brown.
That's an important contingency, Dave.
But, like, the Antonio Brown contract was more favorable than the Revis contract. If he stays and plays, great. So you take that risk. Again, they got saddled with $9 million, which has now been negotiated down. They just got, I think, four or five in the back.
Four back.
So
there was a lot. There was – Revis did not exhibit the instability that Brown did in Oakland before he got released.
What? Okay, but you go to Randy Moss, you can go to Corey Dillon. Look, they've done it 100 times.
They didn't pay a premium for Moss, either in terms of giving up compensation or monetarily.
At the end of the day, what did it cost them? I think it cost them $10 million total. Again, the Pittsburgh Steelers paid Antonio Brown $20 million last year.
I like to think the Patriots are better at manipulating the salary cap than the Steelers are. The Steelers just gave Bud Dupree.
They are. I just proved it.
Outrageous deal.
They are. They are better.
Bud Dupree is like, really, Bud Dupree?
Look, they got burned. They took a risk. It wasn't even that bad of a risk. But
They're not perfect. That's spoiler, no, perfect, the Patriots are not perfect.
No shit, but they got burned on the Antonio Brown deal, but they knew that going in. And they mitigated that risk to the largest extent possible, okay? For where else are you going to get an all-pro wide receiver the day before the season starts, okay? They got a pretty good deal on him. I'm not killing him for that. $13 million coming home to roost on Tom Brady, that was going to happen at some point or another. By the way, how did they navigate it? They have a second-year quarterback, and they found a former MVP on the open market for at most $7.5
million. They didn't know there was going to be a former MVP on the market when they gave Brady that raise.
But you know what? They knew they had Stidham, and they knew there would be options. There are always options.
Yes. Agreed.
And here's one of the things that's crazy. This whole, like, all the talk this whole offseason has been about how the Patriots mismanaged the cap from the people who tell us that the cap is meaningless.
That's fair. Right? That's fair. Right? Cap is crap,
but which is it? Is the cap crap, or is Bill Belichick bad at managing it?
It depends which side you're looking at, which side of the argument you're on. That's all it is. And that's the larger point that we're trying to expose here.
And
it's that they're not consistent. It's whether you're coming from over here, they're incompetent, or they didn't take advantage of obtaining an asset.
They also just finished. Obviously, we're a season removed from it, but they're the only team in history to go to three consecutive Super Bowls during the salary cap era.
That's true.
Monumentally difficult to do. They've kept the team together, and now they're actually 1 year away from cap heaven. So if this is the rebuilding year, they got a pretty good roster right now. People want to take this like $6 million they found and go get Jadeveon Clowney, which if they...
During a pandemic when death is going to be important, that's the thing that blows my mind about this cap room. They got $7.75 million and hope... The deadline for Tooney is Wednesday.
Yep.
Where they can they open up some cap space and they can do some other stuff. The Tooney one is the most glaring one where they can trade him
if they could trade him and free up about $14 to $15 million.
Although they could trade him up until the start of the season and the cap hit because it's 1 year,
would then
transfer the other team.
Yes. Right? They have a few days to rework his contract.
He can't sign a long term deal after Wednesday. Whatever the
right
6 p.m.
And,
Eastern.
And that's – and you know, a trade becomes – you if you're a team that's in the market for Joe Tooney, you would want to get him before that deadline so that you can sign him to a long-term deal. Otherwise, your price goes down. So, So, people want to go get Clowney or another defensive end. If they found a way to do a deal with Clowney that they liked, that'd be great for them. I mean, remember Trey Flowers? Well, here you go. You know, you get all that stuff back.
Well, the Clowney guy who can kind of do it all. He's turned down in the teens of millions guaranteed from the Seahawks. Right. So maybe he falls into the Newton category where the longer it goes, the more accessible he goes. He bets on himself.
Maybe he didn't like playing for Maybe he didn't like Pete Carroll's culture. I don't know. But
Now, you're baiting me with that. You're baiting me.
Do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about your friend Mina Kimes?
Like, much like Jim Nance, she's not my friend.
Okay, so here's a comment that you observed on a podcast with Bill Simmons.
Yes.
Okay, what podcast was it?
It was the Bill Simmons podcast, ironically, yes.
Okay.
California right, so Bill, the California Bill special.
So yeah, so here's Mina Kimes from ESPN talking about, she's kind of discussing Belichick and Pete Carroll and sort of, you know, what works for one and what works for the other and compare and contrast kind of thing.
Greatness of Bill Belichick. It's funny, think about him and Carroll kind of in conjunction, because I think they have, like I said, they have very different personalities, very different qualities, and I think probably have things that are lacking in the other. Like, I think Bill Belichick could probably
up to here, by the way. I don't have huge problems with that.
Agreed.
Up to that point.
Okay. Agreed.
All right, here we go.
It's very different qualities, and I think probably have things that are lacking in the other. Like, I think Bill Belichick could probably benefit from a little bit of Pete Carroll's culture building. Mm.
Okay.
Stop it.
Look, if you want to say that Pete Carroll is like the most...
I'm shaking like Cliff Clavin right now.
I mean, if the premise is that Pete Carroll is like the best at managing personalities...
I'm flipping off the screen. I'm flipping off the screen like Earl Thomas being carted off.
First of all, I have to say, I love that culture building narrative because, and I love that she put it into Pete Carroll, because all we've been told for all this time is that Bill Parcells built the culture. So Bill Parcells built the culture that won all these championships, and it was the culture that won, which doesn't make any sense because
Bill Parcells didn't win
here for
4 years. One AFC title in New England. I
didn't witness
firsthand. Dave, I gave up my tickets. I gave up my season tickets because I couldn't take any more of the Patriots under Pete Carroll stepping on their collective dicks game after game. I remember it wasn't Steve Beth Israel. It was Chris Canty who made a big hit, forced a fumble, and then start dancing on the field at the old Foxborough Stadium. That's the culture that Pete Carroll, culture builder. Listen, Pete Carroll is a much better coach than I give him credit for. He clearly did a great job at USC. It's Belichick's here. He's at the top of the mountain. You got Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, maybe Doug Peterson, and then there's a step down from there. So, Pete Carroll's a better coach than I give him credit for, but to compare a culture building, Pete Carroll's culture building to Bill Belichick,
it's like saying that
the artist at Faneuil Hall is better than Picasso. Come on.
But 96 to 99, did Pete Carroll build this culture? Is this, 97 to 99, 3 years. Did Pete Carroll, should we put him in the Patriots Hall of Fame for building the culture that won all of these championships?
I honestly can't discuss this. Dave, I can't discuss this rationally. It's the Mina Kimes thing. Seahawks fan. I get it. The most offensive part of this, and I don't think you've played it to its conclusion.
I want to finish the end.
Is Bill Simmons agreeing with her going,
nodding. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah.
California Bill Simmons. Bel Air Bill Simmons.
A little bit of Pete Carroll's culture building, his eye for development, quite frankly. Carroll could benefit from Belichick's malleability, his willingness to completely shed scheme,
Right. Okay, so that's where it stops.
Pete Carroll's been running Chris Carson into the line for 4 years in a row. That's culture building.
So like the national media gets this sort of free pass to talk about these people against a cartoon version of themselves. That the media has created this narrative of, you know, like, come to Foxborough, come to the locker room, talk to these players. It is just like anywhere else. There are players that love Bill Belichick. They think that he has created the perfect culture in which they can be the best football player they can be. There's a lot of that. You talked to a few years ago, Martellus Bennett was here telling me every team that he's been on has tried to suppress his individuality. The one place he could be himself out of Dallas, New York, Chicago, in New England was New England. That was the only Green place Bay. Where they were
he
like.
He got released from Green Bay after half a
year.
Go
do your thing. Yeah. Got released from Green Bay after half a year. And came to New England and said they allowed him to be an individual more than any place he had been. He also said, I thought was pretty interesting, of those first four franchises at the time, Dallas, the Giants, the Patriots, and Chicago, he said the only two, and I'm going to guess that this probably applies to Green Bay too because things didn't really go well there, the only two that actually felt like a team were New York under Coughlin and New England under Belichick. Now, Coughlin also has this reputation of being like a terrible culture guy who's too hard on people.
Coughlin time.
But you know what? The funny thing about culture is that it takes a lot of people. There are a lot of people in a culture. And people respond to things in different ways. It's all on the individual level. There are people who will never like playing for Pete Carroll. There are people who will never like playing for Bill Belichick. But this idea,
Dave, it's a workplace.
Bill has something to learn from Pete on that, I don't think is true. And I don't think you can replicate Pete Carroll's culture without being Pete Carroll.
Fair? I think Pete Carroll's probably true to himself, as I think Belichick is.
Yeah. Right,
but
I agree.
At the end of
the
day,
I think they're both fine.
Right, and I think Bill was a Patriots
reason.
Fan. How long
There's
was Coughlin the coach of the Giants?
12
years, about a dozen 04, years.
It was like 11. It was like, I think it was 04 through.
Okay, so that's kind of immaterial to my argument here. I think that if you want to throw a blanket over Coughlin, Belichick, Reed, they're. Even Jim Harbaugh, who's now with Michigan, I think the common thread between those coaches are they're unapologetically themselves, first and foremost.
Right.
They're authentic.
Yeah.
And they are who they are, and they're themselves. I want to bring it to like, try to make it relatable to myself. When I'm managing people, I'm not trying to emulate Dick Vermeil or Bill Parcells or whatever it is. It's you're managing people. You're going to have people who love you. You're going to have people who hate you. People in the middle, like, just roll their eyes. If it's what matters is you get more people on your side than not.
My dad,
just by the law of math, you're going to have people on both sides of the ledger.
My father used to love this quote from Billy Martin, where he said, well, Martin said,
I know the quote you're going to say. Go ahead.
A third of the lot, I think it's like a third of the lot, or is 25 guys on a roster. There are five of them who love you and five of them who hate you. And what you have to do is you have to keep the 15 in the middle from siding with the five who hate you.
Or keep Reggie Jackson from going after you with a bat.
Right.
Right.
Hey, it worked. But I think that's about right. You can't pretend to be someone you're not. And manage a football team and do it well. You can't keep up.
53 people plus a practice squad. I mean, it's – come on. You're going to have somebody who sidles up the mittens or to PPP recipient Greg Bredard.
And then next thing you know, your video crew is out in Cleveland. It's not even your video crew.
Ugh.
And you know Cincinnati. What I mean? Like, it's so much to manage. Belichick got himself in trouble not in trouble, but he acknowledged that when he was in Cleveland, he was too abrasive with the media, more so than now. Like, he was trying to be Bill Parcells, and that didn't work out for him. So
I will say that going back to the America's Game 2001 and having lived it in real time, Belichick was a lot more open with the media in 2001 than he was in this past decade. He had this quote that I remember from the 2001 America's Games, where he was asked about the press about the Bledsoe-Brady debate. And I'm paraphrasing. And he said, we're going to pull the fourth graders. We're going to pull the barbers. You know, he kind of indulged it, but then he cut it off at that point.
So So just to give a quick some quick attention to that punishment, I think there are two things I want to say. First of all, I think it's absolutely
a third
ridiculous.
Round pick for having a third party follow a scout. Well, it's just absurd. It's absurd, and I'm probably guilty of this as well, because there's a certain amount of fatigue with all this NFL punishment mm-hmm. bullshit when it comes to these potentially marginal Patriots infractions. It's bullshit, full stop, in my opinion.
So it's a shame that David Mondillo lost his job. He'd been there for like 18 years. He was the supervisor out there that day. Everyone knows what happened. The NFL came to the conclusion there was no coordination between the video crew that was out there and actual football operations. Those people didn't work for the Patriots. I'm a little disappointed the way Mike Reese reported it, because Mike Reese reported that he was fired by the Patriots. He never worked for the Patriots.
Crap Productions, correct?
At the end of the day, this guy lost a job that he's had for 2 decades for optics. And that's a shame. It didn't have to go that way. We don't have to take the NFL so seriously that we believe that the Patriots hatched the dumbest cheating plan ever to spy on a 2-14 Cincinnati Bengals.
I've been told time and again, Dave, that the Patriots are nefarious and smarter than everyone else. And they had a third party go in there. It's so simple, it's stupid. They have Kraft Sports Productions stupid. Follow a scout to a press box in an opposing stadium that was vouched for by the Cleveland Browns to record a day in the life, the game day in the life of a scout. It is absurd.
Also, my impression on this is not based, I have no inside information. This is just my 2 cents. I think the Patriots are like you. I think that they're tired of this. I think that they managed this thing with this outcome in mind from the start. I think
Stockholm syndrome. That is classic Stockholm syndrome.
I wouldn't call it that. I'd call it game theory. It's they gamed it out. They said, look, the NFL is going to find nothing. They're going to realize this is an optics problem. We're going to own up to it from the beginning, and we're not going to fight him on it. And that's it.
Do you remember the Ben McAdoo using a walkie-talkie on the sidelines during the Giants game?
The Giants,
do you know what the punishment was for that?
Like a fifth-round pick or something?
Fifth-round pick. Yeah. The Patriots having a third party in the booth that they released the tapes right away was a third-round pick. And the NFL rationalized it by saying, the thing that bothers
coaches
me, Dave,
who aren't giving signals.
Right. It's absurd to the point where the only reason we're talking about it is due to the punishment.
Yep.
But the NFL, the thing that bothers me, and I don't want to get into a Spygate thing because I'll lose my damn fool mind.
We'll save that for
They rationalized it by saying due to previous infractions, i.e. Spygate.
Look,
and Deflategate. Deflategate's the biggest sham in the history of that league, caller.
Yes,
we've been through this time and again.
It's like, because we had crummy rules that didn't make any sense in 2006, and then we got
more to the point, they kicked in everybody's dicks for 2 decades. They need to have a handicap behind them. It's the same way when I play a guy with a 7 handicap on the golf course, where I need a couple of shots over the course of 9 holes. It's the same
angle.
Thing. The NFL is trying to handicap Belichick.
So, and that was me accidentally playing some audio. If you have your Entitled Town bingo card out, but look, I'm just saying, I think they saw where this was all going, and I understand why they did it this way. At the end of the day, no one was going to believe, like fans across the league were not going to stomach this. And so the NFL manages all of their punishments through the lens of public perception. This is nothing different. And the Patriots this time around, I mean, there was no 4 games of Tom Brady at stake. They were like, we can get this into a second or third day draft pick if we just play along. And I think that's what they did.
The Colts stuck a needle in the footballs during the 2014 AFC Championship game. The Steelers and another team, I can't remember which team, heated balls on the sideline during a December game. Nothing. The Patriots fart in their general direction of an infraction, they lose a third round pick.
There have been 2 times, including once during the regular season, when the Steelers have been accused of having underinflated balls. And
I have three words, Dave. I'll give you 6 words. with the Steelers and the Giants. Sainted Rooney family, sainted Mara family.
Like, the NFL,
they're NFL royalty.
The Giants never filed a public an official complaint with the league. Okay,
did Josh Brown threaten them? Is that what happened?
Had the regular season game in 2016, the Giants didn't file an official complaint with the league, so the league never looked into it. Okay, the owner of the Giants has a daughter whose name is the last name of the owner of the Steelers, Rooney Mara, because they really like each other over there. Okay, the owners in New York like the owners in Pittsburgh. They're not going to do a Deflategate to them. They've seen how ugly it gets. And honestly, maybe good for everybody that the Giants didn't do that, but it's like...
No, not good for everybody. No.
Not good for... Right. But it shows how, at the very least, it shows how... Well, I'm just glad we didn't have to live through another dumb Deflategate scandal, but it shows how stupid the whole thing was to begin with. No one cares how much airs in the football. They just
Dave, I'll leave it with this. It's more probable than not. The NFL is inept and corrupt.
I think they're at least generally aware of the corruption. So
agreed.
There we go. Do we have anything else we need to hit? What do you think?
One quick email from John from Sacramento. Okay. He wants to know if Cam Newton is going to be the next Reggie Wayne. Doesn't make the team. I go back to my answer. We don't know. It's a low risk, high reward signing. I feel like I've gotten my immediate credibility Reggie card. It's like low risk, high reward.
Reggie Wayne was like right after my time, I think, when it came here. It was a little after my so I was covering the Patriots until 2008 and then didn't come back till 16. So I don't remember how much hype was around Reggie Wayne. But it's very different.
Reggie Wayne was a lot older for his position than Newton was.
Yes, exactly. I don't think if this doesn't work out for Newton, he's still going to have more chances. Let's put it that way.
I don't think
he's going to retire.
And that's why I think the Newton thing is analogous to Warner, because Warner, you know, we can disagree. Yeah. Warner wasn't healthy with the Giants. He was a fumble machine because his hand wasn't right. If you remember in Super Bowl 36, he was flexing his thumb the entire game.
Mark
Bulger replaced him much in the same way that the kid who played quarterback for the Panthers last, who just got signed by Ron Rivera in Washington. And then the Panthers signed Teddy Bridgewater, new regime. It's very much the same thing. The whole regime, Vermeil left, Martz was hot on Bulger. The Panthers wanted to get rid of Newton to bring with their new regime. Newton's free. We're during a pandemic. He couldn't show that he was healthy. He took a deal in the best possible place where he had the best chance to start with the best infrastructure. Right. I mean, it's smart on both sides.
Well, I think we've done a podcast here. I don't have any reviews to read. So what do you say? We're good?
I think we've done a podcast. And I think
I'm so happy that we've recorded this, and I really want to get it out to the people. All right, well, email us, follow us on Twitter at EntitledTown.
EntitledTown@gmail.com, @EntitledTown. And for the faithful dozen, hope you enjoyed it.
All right, we're on to Cam Newton. We're on to the preseason probably. And until we see you next time, probably with the Wickersham episode, bye for now.